Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I tried slicing garlic super thin to liquefy in the pan. Doesn't work. This is Goodfellas.
That is like one of the greatest sadnesses of this movie, is that the garlic in real life does not liquefy in the pan.
Yeah.
I wish it did.
Yeah.
I always, for years, just took it. I was like, yeah, this movie knows what it's talking about.
But you know, you definitely should let your olive oil infuse with, I just put whole cloves of garlic. And then the olive oil will get infused with garlic.
You put whole cloves?
Yeah. What do you mean? And then you take out those pieces of garlic once they're cooked and you smash them and you put it in the pasta or whatever you're making.
Oh, I see.
But the oil is infused.
Hello. Welcome to Seen and Heard. This is the podcast all about the sight and sound greatest films of all time list. I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we're smiling a little bit because we just recorded this intro already, but we accidentally, I didn't hit record. So we're doing it again.
So what number is this on the list?
This is number 63 on the 2022 list. And we're just here to say that this is our final film before our break, because if you haven't heard, I'm having a baby.
Yay!
I'm going on paternity leave. We don't know how long I'll be gone, but I will be gone for a bit. And it coincides with us finishing the 2022 Top 100 list. So this is our final film from that list. We've ping-ponged to the center of this damn list. And this is it. So after this, we'll have done the 2012 list and the 2022. So you're asking, well, what? Why are you returning then? Because there's a 250.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to be doing. So when we come back, which we don't know when that'll be, but we are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing the 2022. I'm getting tongue-tied even thinking of all this stuff. The 2022 top 250.
Which has some overlap.
Yeah, there will be some that we've already done. So obviously we'll skip those. Yeah, bumped off the 2012 list. So anyway, but before we get into this week's film, Jackie, what else have you been watching this last week?
I saw The Man Who Wasn't There, which was
nice.
The Coen Brothers film, which is great and features James Gandolfini, which is ping-pongy because there's a lot of Sopranos actors in this movie.
There are.
Today. And I honestly didn't know he was in it. I didn't. When his name popped up in the credits, I was so happy. I almost cried.
What?
And then I went and saw Mother Mary, which was, you know, Mother Mary.
What does that mean? I could tell by your face.
You go see it.
The news isn't good?
You'll go see it. Yeah. What have you been watching?
I love how diplomatic you are on this show. And I'm like, this movie is a piece of shit. The filmmaker should go straight to hell. And you're like, yeah, it's a movie.
You know, yeah.
No, I admire it.
I don't want to give any spoilers and, you know.
The only movie I've seen this week, because we are recording this because of our schedules this week, this is only a few days after we recorded Daughters of the Dust. So I've only seen one movie, but it's Point Blank, continuing on my noir journey. This is firmly in the neo-noir psychedelic 60s thing with Lee Marvin. And oh my God, Jackie.
Really good?
You need
the
to
news
see
is good.
Someone should have shaken me, because the fact that I've gone almost 38 years without seeing this movie is a crime. Someone needed to slap me awake, because as I was watching it, I literally said out loud, I was like, where the fuck has this been my whole life?
Wow.
It's incredible.
Wow.
It's incredible. John Borman's second film, amazing, singular, fantastic movie.
Wow.
This movie's pretty swell, see? It's just fantastic.
What'd you watch it on?
The new Criterion restoration. Criterion just did like a 4K restoration, and it looks beautiful. But yeah, the movie is top shelf, as they say.
Wow.
I would run.
High praise.
Really, really next level filmmaking in this that just like kind of took my breath away. The fact that like this movie from the 60s took my breath away. And then it's like watching stuff now that's made now. And I'm just like, yeah, it's fine. But I'm like here in this movie from 1967 took my breath away. But it did. It's incredible. You should see it.
What movies way older have taken your breath away?
Oh, no, I know. But I'm just saying so few like modern movies do.
Mm. Well, would you consider 1990 modern?
I was just about to say, as a segue of movies taking my breath away, without showing my cards too early, we should just get into this week's film.
This movie's 35 years old.
It is. 36.
Jeez.
From 1990. This is Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas.
As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
Goodfellas was released in 1990. It was directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Scorsese and Nicholas Pileggi, based on his book Wise Guy. Cinematography by Michael Ballhaus. The film follows the rise and fall of Henry Hill during his 30-year career as a New York City mobster. Henry grows up in an Italian-American neighborhood in Brooklyn and starts working part-time as an errand boy for the local mob capo, Polly Cicero. Lured by the money and power of the gangsters, Henry starts skipping school and fully embraces the lifestyle. He meets Jimmy Conway, a charismatic thief who takes him under his wing, as well as Tommy DeVito, a hot-headed teen delinquent. Tommy and Henry grow up to become wise guys with Jimmy. Together, they hijack, rob, and extort. They pull off the Air France robbery, stealing more than $400,000 of untraceable cash from the airport. After a double date with Tommy, Henry meets Karen, who is apprehensive to Henry's lifestyle at first. But after Harry beats up a neighbor who harassed her, Karen realizes how exciting life with Henry can be. They marry and start a family. Meanwhile, Henry climbs the ranks in Polly's organization, and the crime family grows closer. After a made man, Billy Batts, insults him, Tommy murders him in a rage. Henry and Jimmy help dispose of the body and are later forced to exhume it when the burial site is bought by a developer. Henry rents an apartment for his mistress, Janice, and spends more and more nights out of the house. Karen finds out and threatens him with a gun, then harasses Janice at home. Henry moves in with Janice, but leaves when Polly insists he fix things with Karen, fearing she will inform on them. Henry and Jimmy are arrested after collecting a debt from a gambler and are sentenced to prison. Henry has Karen smuggle in drugs and other commodities during visitation. Once out of prison, Henry starts dealing cocaine, despite Polly's explicit orders not to. Jimmy organizes the Lufthansa heist, which becomes the greatest cash robbery in the United States at the time. He tells everyone involved not to make big purchases or call attention to themselves, but they ignore him, and he kills everyone involved. Tommy is being inducted as a made man, but when he arrives for the ceremony, he's executed in retaliation for killing Billy Batts. Years later, Henry is a heavy cocaine user. On one frantic day, Henry juggles drug deliveries, cooking dinner, helicopter surveillance, and mounting anxiety before finally being arrested. Polly cuts him off for disobeying his orders. Henry realizes that Jimmy will have him whacked for fear of informing. Henry agrees to cooperate with the FBI, and he testifies against Polly and Jimmy, helping dismantle the crew. The film ends with Henry entering witness protection. Living as an ordinary suburban citizen, he mourns his life of excitement. The film stars Ray Liotta as Henry Hill, Robert De Niro as Jimmy Conway, Joe Pesci as Tommy DeVito, and Lorraine Bracco as Karen Hill. Nicholas Pileggi is a New York crime reporter who wrote the book Wise Guy, based on the real-life mobster Henry Hill. He was actually married to Nora Ephron, and because of the amount of research he did with Henry Hill, she also made a film kind of inspired by Henry Hill called My Blue Heaven.
Oh, yeah, with Rick Moranis.
It also came out in 1990.
Wow.
And Steve Martin plays like Henry Hill in Witness Protection.
Right.
I've never seen it.
I've never seen it
but
either.
It's crazy to me. Martin Scorsese did not want to make another mafia movie, but then he read the book and allegedly called Pileggi and said, "I've been waiting for this book my whole life." And Pileggi apparently responded saying, "I've been waiting for this phone call my entire life." He was heavily influenced by the narration and quick cuts at the start of Jules and Jim, the Francois Truffaut movie. He always wanted to start the film in the middle and work backwards. He wanted it to be episodic. And he just basically chose sections of the book that he liked most. Most of the characters in the film are based on real members of the mafia, but their names have been changed. Tommy DeSimone became Tommy DeVito, which is actually the name of the guitarist of the Four Seasons, and he was Joe Pesci's friend, and he decided to name him after him. The film was originally titled The Wise Guy, but they changed it because of two other projects coming out with a similar name, Brian De Palma's film, Wise Guys. And there was a TV series called Wise Guy, which ran from 1987 to 1990. Ray Liotta fought really hard to get the part, but because Warner Brothers wanted a well-known actor. Al Pacino, John Malkovich, they were considered for the part of Jimmy.
John Malkovich?
Can you imagine?
No.
But Sean Penn, Alec Baldwin, Val Kilmer, and Tom Cruise were considered for Henry. Also, Madonna was considered for the role of Karen. Lorraine Bracco tried to befriend a mob wife, but none of them would hang out with her because, you know, they're very secretive. She chose not to meet the real Karen because she wanted to create her own character. The guy who plays the FBI agent is the real agent who prosecuted Henry. And he basically just recreated the conversation that he had with the real Henry and Karen. That scene is unscripted. Cool. And the way it came about is that a location scout was taking pictures of his office. And he was like, "If you guys need me to play myself, like, I will." And they were like, "Are you serious?" And he was like, "Yeah."
His dream come true.
That's how that happened. But they actually didn't meet, the cast didn't meet Henry Hill until right before the premiere. He saw the film early and loved it. Imagine if this was the movie about your life. Yeah, like, that's, like, insane.
It's more flattering than Jake LaMotta with Raging Bull, though.
Yeah. The cast would ad-lib a lot in rehearsals, and Scorsese would just take notes and then incorporate that into the script. The famous Funny How scene is an example of this. Joe Pesci has said that that moment was inspired by an encounter he had when he was working as a waiter with a real mobster. He said that to some mobster and he didn't take it well, so that's where that comes from. Catherine Scorsese, the director's mother, plays Tommy's mother in the film. The scene where they ate dinner at her house after borrowing the shovel was also improvised, except the part about the painting that was written. I know, it's so funny. The long tracking shot in the Copacabana came about because they actually couldn't get permission to go in the short way. It was shot on location at the real Copacabana, as it was back then. The Copacabana has changed locations a bunch. And it's still open. Did you know it's still open?
No, I didn't.
I know. So, yeah, Scorsese made lemonade out of lemons. They went the back way. He shot it 8 times. It featured the real comedian, the king of one-liners, Henry Youngman.
That guy's great.
Yeah.
Take my wife,
he's
please.
He's a real guy. He's a real comedian. The ending shot of Joe Pesci shooting the camera is a reference to the Great Train Robbery from 1903. The budget of the film was $25 million, and it was shot on location in Queens, upstate New York, New Jersey, and Long Island. And it was a huge critical and box office success. It was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, but only Joe Pesci won for Best Supporting Actor. Famously, Roger Ebert liked this film more than The Godfather. He said it was the best mobster movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And David Chase has said that Goodfellas heavily influenced his decision to create The Sopranos. And The Sopranos actually shares 27 actors with Goodfellas.
Yeah.
27! Including, of course, Lorraine Bracco, Tony Sirico, Michael Imperioli, Frank Pellegrino, Vincent Pastore, who is in it for a second.
Yeah, he's
but
like
I recognized
line.
Him.
He's Pussy.
I know. And he's just holding the thing.
The coat rack.
I'm like, that's Pussy.
Frank Vincent, who plays Billy Batts, is also
Frank
in Sopranos.
Frank Vincent and Tony Lip. Those are like the heavy hitters. But there's many more
yeah.
that cross over, which is insane. But yeah, those are my specs.
I do know, just the only thing to add is that, first of all, Thelma Schumacher, my God.
Yeah, queen.
I know that she, I don't know if she came up with or Scorsese was like, we should edit this like it's a feature length trailer.
Wow.
That was like kind of their approach for it.
Interesting.
I also know that because Ray Liotta spent a lot of time with Henry Hill, like in preparation. And there was this interview that Ray Liotta gave later in his life where he would see Henry Hill like in Santa Monica or Venice Beach or something. And he wouldn't elaborate, but just how he was not in a good place.
Oh.
So I think Henry Hill spent the last stretch of his life, I believe, here in LA and was just kind of like talking to himself on like the Santa Monica Pier or whatever.
What?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, before we get into initial thoughts, just this quick word from our sponsors.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackie, this was your first time. No, I'm just kidding.
Duh.
How many times have you seen this before?
I don't know.
When was the first time you saw it?
I don't remember.
Did you seek this out on your own?
Yeah, I think so. Probably high school. This is my first time seeing it since watching The Sopranos.
I was about to say.
So this was a really, really fun experience for me. It was like seeing your old friends. Like, it was just every time a familiar face would pop up, I was just so happy. But I remembered that obviously, what's his name in the movie? Snake? Spider Snake, I was going to say. I remembered that that was Christopher.
Yeah.
I don't remember Paul. Obviously, I knew that, you know, Dr. Melfi is.
Yeah.
You know. But I never see, it's different seeing. It's a different experience watching it after you've seen The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was just really fun. I really felt the Jules and Jim this time. It's so funny that that was like the first thing I found because I really felt it. And it's just, you know, what can I say about The Sopranos?
You mean Goodfellas?
Fuck yeah. But there really is no Sopranos without this movie in terms of like the tone and the comedy and the way that it's kind of just like a hangout movie. Like,
well, you know, it's interesting you say that. Sorry, I know I'm butting into your initial thoughts, but I do think Sopranos really, in the first couple episodes and maybe the first season of Sopranos, it kind of feels like maybe he's trying to do Goodfellas, and then Sopranos is able to breathe and becomes very much something that doesn't really resemble Goodfellas at all.
You're right. I'm only on season 3 right now, but I see that. I mean, what can I say? It's eye candy in terms of like the time. I love anything set in this era. The music is perfect. It's very entertaining. Yeah. And you know, especially after we kind of just did Raging Bull.
That was a few years ago, Jackie.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
When was it? Last year. That was 2025.
Oh, it was. It was.
I told you.
It was February 2025.
Told you.
You're right.
Anyway, my point is I do like the way that Scorsese treats these wives.
Yeah.
I really do. I think he does this really wonderful thing. Well, yes. There aren't many women in these films, but when there are, they're given the time of day. We really get to enter their minds. We really get to see how terrible these guys are. Like, it's just done well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think here maybe more, just because Karen's narration comes in and it's so unexpected and it's so good. Anyway, those are my initial thoughts.
Compared to The Godfather.
I think I like The Godfather more.
Yeah.
What about you?
You know, it's interesting.
They're different.
It's kind of classical versus rock, right? It's like...
Exactly. Exactly.
I like them both the same.
It is exactly classical versus rock.
I mean, look, this is such a stereotype because last week I came on when we did Daughters of the Dust. So I was like, yeah, it's kind of boring. And then of course I love Goodfellas. Like, of course. It's such a cliche.
Everyone loves Goodfellas.
This is the ultimate channel.
Bro movie.
No. It's the ultimate channel stop movie. When you're surfing channels, which
yes.
Kids these days don't know what we're talking about, but you would, when this was on, you would stop. And you just watch the rest.
Yeah.
Because you had to.
Yeah.
I first saw this when I was probably in, like, I want to say 8th or 9th grade. I might have mentioned this when we did The Godfather, so I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but my grandpa was half Italian. His parents came over from Italy, but my grandpa's Italian identity, it was like full, and he was so proud of it. And I was really close with my grandpa growing up, and there was this up in Oakland where I grew up, there was this Italian social club that's been there since the 20s. It's still there, called the Colombo Club. I grew up going there, and it was my first ever job, was waiting tables there. And when I was too young to be working, and I was getting paid under the table in cash.
That's cool.
But all this to say,
Like Henry Hill,
all this to say, basically people that were Henry's age, I knew because they were older in the 90s when I saw them at the Columbo Club. There's a certain kind of, like, we talked about this when we did The Godfather, but kind of being raised in this Italian American culture, like, when I first saw Goodfellas, I was like, how did he nail this? Like, he nailed it. And there's just a certain look to these people from this era, the Italian Americans, that, like, it just feels so authentic and feels so lived in. So I actually saw this for the first time back in the early Netflix DVD days when you'd have to get the DVD in the mail. And I remember this was one of those flipper discs where, like, half the movie was on one side, then it would tell you to flip the disc over. Like, what is this, a laser disc? And so that's how I first saw Goodfellas. But I remember I finished the movie. I called my friend. I was like, have you seen this movie, Goodfellas? He's like, no. I got on my bicycle and I just rode to his house. And I was like, watch this right now. But that later that day, I want to say it was the same day, was my first day waiting tables at the Columbo Club.
Wow.
So when I got to the Columbo Club, I was in the fucking movie. I was in this movie.
Crazy.
Guys, you know, these guys with, you know, Pauly in Sopranos has these wings where it's like the sides are a little gray and he kind of like swoops them back. Guys like that with the, you know, the pinky rings, the rings all over, the bracelets. Hey, kid, come here. And like, I would get kids, I would get people, you know, so they'd ask for something special in the back and I'd bring it to them and they'd go to shake my hand and there'd be a 20 in their hand. And it was just this very old world place to grow up in. So when I first saw this movie and then I went to work and I was like, I'm in the movie.
That's really cool.
But like, this movie, I mean, I've seen this so many times. I think most people have seen this so many times. And I think because this movie is ubiquitous with just the fabric of American pop culture, like, there's no escaping Goodfellas. It's a perfect film. I know some people have issues with it in terms of maybe they don't think it's as deep as it should be or anything, but it's like Scorsese had made those movies already. Like, Raging Bull is an incredibly absurd.
I feel like is the deep version.
But that's not even to take anything away from Goodfellas, because
no!
I do think there's a lot going on here.
There is so much going on here.
But I think what's happening here is Scorsese at the height of his powers, someone who is a true student of cinema, where he's seen every fucking movie out there. And like you said, he's using every goddamn trick that he knows in the book and pulling things. Well, you're talking about Jules and Jim and Great Train
Robbery. Oh, yeah.
But it's like he's pulling from all these places, from the French New Wave, from silent film, and it creates, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
That just like...
just an extremely kinetic, like you said, 2.5 hour long trailer.
Yeah, but so much more. And
it's,
I
so
think
much more.
It's about this country, and it's about, I think the thing about the movie is it's kind of not really about Henry. Like, Henry is the avatar into this world, because it's true, when the movie ends, you're not like, what a great character study of Henry. It's more just like he's almost written as like a pawn.
He is a pawn.
But because Ray Liotta is coming up and having this moment and is so perfect in this movie, so
he
magnetic,
so
that you care more about him because Ray Liotta is doing some heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And it has to be said too that like Ray Liotta at this time, like, have you seen Something Wild, the Jonathan Demme movie?
No, I haven't. But that's the movie that Robert De Niro saw him in and said, like, we should cast this guy.
He's fantastic in that. But like, it's rare to see someone so well suited for the role where like no one else should have played this. Like, it's just Ray Liotta. And it's like, not truly, that is fucking crazy.
That was for Jimmy.
Still. John Malkovich is not cool and he's not dangerous, no matter how hard he tries. I can't. John Malkovich may be one of the FBI guys at the end. Like, that's the best I can give him in this movie. Or like that's the mailman funny. That gets put in the oven or something. But no, perfect movie. Perfect movie.
I mean, yeah, but like you said, I think, okay, so Martin Scorsese described this as a mob home movie about money.
About money.
That's how he describes it. And I think that's kind of perfect because you're right. Distilling it down to it's a 2.5 hour long trailer is wrong because it is, it's so much more than that. It's so much deeper than that. And I think that kind of hits the nail on the head because what I love most about this movie is that it is basically just, it's world building. Like it's an ensemble about the ordinary day-to-day lives of these guys, but it just, you know, their ordinary just happens to be exciting. And that's the whole thing of the characters, like his whole life, he just wanted that excitement. So like, I think that's, yeah, I just, to me, it's almost like a hangout movie.
It's interesting.
It's episodic.
It kind of is, I guess, but I typically associate those, like we did Rio Bravo for the show or something, movies that are slower paced where
maybe
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood kind of
But yeah, this is kind of,
but there's always something happening.
It's more like a home. Yeah. There's always something happening because their lives are just inherently exciting.
Yeah.
But I do love the way that he builds this world. I mean, the long shot in the tiki bar. Ugh. When we see pussy. That's your favorite sight.
Wait. I can already tell. Oh, yeah. Pussy's at the end. Yeah, yeah.
Pussy's at the end. I also love how there's no one specific that they're saying hi to. It's not Henry because Henry comes in from the back. They're just talking to the camera.
No, and the beautiful thing.
Such a good, I love that.
The beautiful thing is no one ever questions that. Like even all the because the thing about Goodfellas is like it's transcended any random, you go to a Best Buy, or I don't know why I picked Best Buy. You go to a Home Depot and you pull someone aside and they're like, Goodfellas, have you seen it? They're going to be like, yep.
Best Buy.
But it's like the fact that those people who don't even watch movies really are not questioning, like, who are they talking to? You know, like.
For sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Or like even I love the wedding scene. And yeah, very home movie.
God.
That's your favorite site?
No, I mean the whole fucking movie.
You're having an emotional reaction to everything I'm saying.
I'm just like remembering the scene like, oh God.
And it's so great with the envelopes and the kissing and the this is Marie and this is Peter and this is Paul. It's so good. I'd forgotten, actually, that she's supposed to be Jewish.
Yes.
Totally forgot that. So she's a total outsider.
Well, her parents, her mom is Carmela's mom in Sopranos.
Really? Yeah. I didn't even recognize her.
He's not even Jewish.
I didn't even recognize her. I love, first of all, why are they living with them when they get married? It's so funny.
I know, because Henry's earning.
Yeah, he has so much money.
Yeah.
I love that part where the mom's getting mad and she goes, Dad! She just like screams,
he hasn't
Dad.
Digested a decent meal.
Yeah, he hasn't digested a decent meal. It's so good. But it's hilarious. Like, why are they living with them? Imagine living with your in-law and you're a mobster. It's just crazy.
I think, too, like, people point out, this is not me pointing this out, I've heard this, but like, this movie is riddled with continuity errors where like Paulie's cigar will be in his mouth and then the shot from across the cigar will be out and then it'll be back in, then it'll be out.
I noticed the cigar once.
But the fact that the movie,
who cares?
It doesn't matter and it moves so quickly and you're so invested in it that you don't, none of those things should matter.
No, absolutely. Let's talk about the intro. It's only 15 minutes.
What? Oh, when they're young?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great casting, too. Like,
oh, my God. They look exactly like
and
them.
And sound. Like the kid that plays Joe Pesci.
So funny. The one that plays Joe Pesci is so funny.
I was just wondering while I was watching this, I was like, what happened to those kids? Because the kid that plays Henry is like pretty good.
He looks just like him.
Yeah.
What happened to them?
I don't know.
But it's so funny because it feels longer than 15 minutes, but not in a bad way. it's just so comprehensive, and we learn so much about Henry and how much he wants to belong and how his life at home is. Like, you get so much information. My dad's Irish. My mom's Italian. My brother's in a wheelchair. I went to the cab stand selling cigarettes. Like, it's all meeting Jimmy. It all happens. And there's the first really long shot, which is so beautiful. And it starts with him making a sandwich. And then Jimmy comes, and it's that long shot. Sandwich looks so good.
Yes.
But just that those 15 minutes are just packed with so much. And then popping his cherry thing.
Getting busted.
Yeah, getting busted. And they're ratting. All out there, and they all kiss him. And it's like, that's what the movie's about. The whole movie's in that 15 minutes, really. Not ratting.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's all there.
Yeah, it's the thesis.
That's it. And it's at the start of the movie.
Yeah. But you're totally right. And I think, like, getting lost in the details of all those things, it does make it feel longer, but not in a bad way. Because you would swear that section is more than
20,
15 minutes.
25, maybe.
Yeah,
never rat on your friends. Always keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Imperative in this line of work.
But really, if we're talking like themes and stuff, that's a big one, I guess. I don't know what I'm saying. It's like 11 p.m. That's a big one. I think I think when people say it's not deep, they probably just mean that, like, Henry doesn't really have any regret. Doesn't really feel, his regret is more just like, man, I miss that lifestyle. It's not ratting on my friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of probably what people are thinking.
I think too, it's beautiful that, I mean, true to life, right? It's like Henry was alive at this time, but like Scorsese and other filmmakers sometimes get attacked for glorifying a certain lifestyle. He definitely got attacked in 2013 when he made Wolf of Wall Street. I think, how stupid can you be to like see this and think that it's glorifying? But you also have to show, why someone would be drawn to this lifestyle. And if you're not showing the appeal of it, then you're doing a bad job.
Exactly.
But there's, like any of these movies, there's a come down. There's a paranoid come down.
Always, yeah. And it's very similar to the Wolf of Wall Street one.
Yeah.
The come down.
There's a lot too. I think that as much as I love Boogie Nights is very much Goodfellas in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
But that still, it feels like its own thing. Like I've always thought that, but I never feel like Goodfellas, or I never felt that Boogie Nights is like, I think just because Paul has his own, it has its own feel.
Yeah.
That it never feels like a Goodfellas clone, even though it's doing so many things that Goodfellas is doing. The freeze frames and all that stuff. Like,
yeah.
The wall-to-wall soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But in fact, in terms of glorifying it, like, here's the thing. Henry Hill himself, he does say, he's like, it was glorious times. There were wise guys all over the place. But you're absolutely right. Obviously, Henry Hill is obsessed with this lifestyle and the movies in his point of view.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be. This still ends really bad for him, as it does for most of these characters, like you said. And Tommy's death is really bad. Tommy's death
it's
sucks.
It's not that bad.
What do you mean? He gets shot in the face.
The back of the head. He never saw it coming.
Yeah,
or he sees it coming for a split
fucked
second.
Up. Like, it shows you.
Wait, have you seen Casino?
Yeah. That one's bad.
Yeah.
That one's bad.
You know, what's funny, I saw Casino before I saw this. And I saw it at too young of an age, and it kind of traumatized me.
Really?
But I also am curious to see what you think, because I know a lot of people, just while we're talking about Casino, a lot of people consider Casino Goodfellas 2.0. And if you have an opinion...
I like Goodfellas more, but I do like Casino a lot.
I think Goodfellas is an infinitely stronger movie than Casino. I think Casino is too long. I almost think that, like, it's like you're talking about here, like the details in the telling of the story in the first 15 minutes and everything. That's the entirety of Casino, where it's just like details.
Information.
This person did this. Here's how many blueberries are in the muffins, blah, 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 blah. It's great. I mean, I like Casino, but... I think for me, because I know some people who like Casino more.
Really?
And I think Goodfellas all the way.
Goodfellas is more entertaining.
Also, Ray Liotta, you can just get behind. I think Robert De Niro as the lead in Casino is just a little too skeezy to fully like spend 3 hours with.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my personal take.
Yeah.
Scorsese grew up with... Have you seen the Italian-American documentary he made about his parents? I mean, yeah, this is like, he knows the time, he knows the place.
I have to see
that. But I love even the details in this movie, like the food And even like how they're always making sausage and peppers, and they even have the sausage and peppers in like the correct rolls that like you always see them in. And it just all feels like, yep, yeah, all those details are correct.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm telling you, the world building here is really beautiful. But also, not only the Italian American stuff is amazing, I love all the like Copa stuff. I love all the bars they go to.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be able to just like sit at a table and watch a singer and like get waited on. Like, that's my dream.
Front of the line.
That is my dream.
They set up a table just for you.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love when they're all mesmerized by that one singer. Do you remember this?
Jerry Vale. Pretend you don't love her.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
When they're there with the girlfriends.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I think, too, this era is often glamorized in the media because it was this very glamorous era. And like we were just talking about Mad Men before, and it's like, the 50s and 60s into the 70s was like such a time.
It was such a hard time and a bad time for a lot of people. And I think we romanticize it a lot and we get nostalgia for it a lot. But I'm telling you, it's purely for the aesthetics. Like,
yeah,
it just looks gorgeous. The music is gorgeous.
Yeah.
The cigarettes are sexy. Like, it's just, I can't help it.
Yeah.
Do I know it was a terrible time? Yes.
I mean, every
time. I probably have been unhappy living in that time? Probably.
Yeah.
unless it was like the 70s and I was Eve Babbitts. Like, that would be sick. But no, definitely. And then, okay, we should talk about Tommy.
Tony.
Let's talk about Tommy. Do we think that Joe Pesci plays this like hothead too much?
Oh, like typecast?
Is he getting typecast?
Because
it's kind of the same in Casino, right?
Let's be real. I love Joe Pesci, but he's a limited actor.
Oh.
And he always plays a version of this kind of character, even in Home Alone. Which is why when I saw him in The Irishman, like warts and all, I appreciated that he was doing something more reserved in The Irishman, like that we weren't used to seeing him. And I was like, he was actually the most impressive part for me of The Irishman. But this is what Joe Pesci does.
I know.
And like, you know what you're in for when you put Joe Pesci in a movie.
He kills Christopher.
Yeah, of course. He's an animal.
It's terrible.
He's an animal.
And he gets what he deserves, is my point.
Yeah. Well, it's like, he's the example in this movie of what happens when you go unchecked, right? It's like, they're all into the lifestyle, but they all have some sort of moral compass. Like, Henry, Jimmy, they all have this moral compass. Maury.
Polly. Polly for sure.
Yeah, he's a father figure. But, like, Tommy is the unchecked, you know, like, that is what happens when it takes you over completely. And he's lost all humanity.
Yeah.
So.
You know what's really interesting is Henry never kills anyone. We don't see Henry kill anyone.
You're right.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
I didn't
right.
realize that until this watch.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this in a while. And he never kills anyone.
I'm pretty sure in real life, too, that Henry did hits on people.
It's just interesting that Scorsese didn't show it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I actually never really realized either that you never see him kill
it's
anyone.
It's kind of interesting. He beats up that neighbor, but I mean, the guy deserved
it. Yeah, the guy totally deserved it.
Oh my
that
God,
scene, too, looks
that
so real.
So good. I know. Why does he give her the gun, though? He's a mobster. Why did he give her the gun?
You know, with this movie, it's...
I know it doesn't matter, but like in my... That's where my mind went the second it happened. It's such a good... image here, hide that. Yeah,
like, well, that's I think what the reason is, because it's a great image. That's why it gives her the gun.
Yeah,
it's gonna leave an impression on your mind.
Yeah, and I just love Karen's narration, because it's like, she's so, the way that Lorraine Bracco speaks is just like so unique, and it's so like matter of fact. Like, I love anytime she says, actually I was very attracted, like anytime she just talks about how she's actually attracted to him, but she's just saying it in her regular Lorraine Bracco voice.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Melfi voice, really.
Yeah.
And it just works so well. It's so fun.
Yeah. Well, she's such a key component of this movie.
Oh, yeah. She's a big part of the reason it works, I think.
I think if you don't have her, it's still stunning or whatever, but, like, she's kind of the heart of the movie. And I think, too, to see she's even a way into Henry a little bit of, like... If you didn't have her, like, he's just kind of there on screen.
Yeah.
She gives him some depth, but then on her own, she's just like because she's the outsider, right? Because the three, Jimmy, Tommy, and Henry, are basically born into this.
Yeah.
Henry gets involved from a very early age. She's the one as an adult coming in and being like, whoa.
But really important for us to see how someone can be lured into this lifestyle.
Oh, for sure.
And it takes him beating the shit out of her neighbor to do it. Like, that's just such a good scene. Like, and it's such a, like, I think about that all the time. Like, how would I?
I mean, she's lured in when he gets the
Copacabana. Yeah, the Copacabana. Oh, my God.
She's like, what did you say you do?
Ugh. It's so good. And then I just love it when she kind of loses it. But also, before I get to when she loses it, when she's going to that hostess party.
Oh, great scene.
Great scene. Because she really, a big part of this movie and the reason why I love this description of like a mob home movie is really the movie is just trying to, and what it does so well is the way that we see how normalized everything was and how it was just a way of life. Like you said, they were just born into it. And to see this outsider coming in and she gets normalized and it turns into a close family and they go on vacations together. The pictures, the snapshots it's of great. Them on vacation.
Yep.
Always going to Polly's house. Like, it just, yeah, I think Karen Hill is a huge, huge part of why this movie works.
Yeah. No, she is so, so, so good in this.
I love her. Nominated for an Oscar for this film.
Should have gotten it.
I think she should have gotten it too.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have no choice but to be insular because it's like if they start fraternizing with people that are not in the mafia, like that wouldn't be a good look. And no, you have to, of course, yeah. It's all one big family.
Yeah.
But it's like under that guise of like, well, we're one big family until you make a wrong move or not even fucking up, but you being alive is not good for me. Mm-hmm. And so like you're gone.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think, sorry, I'm really stuck on this no depth thing because I think that it's just wrong. Because I think Henry is apathetic. Like, mm-hmm. That's it. Like, he's, mm-hmm. Even when Jimmy, his best friend, is going to betray him, we don't get that scene of him, like, breaking down.
Right.
And for that reason, people think the movie lacks depth.
Right.
But really, I just think he's numb. Like, I just think he's completely
Yeah, he's been
numb.
Conditioned.
Yeah.
He knows the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And he can sense things coming from
yeah.
a mile
like,
away.
Like, they're sad when Tommy died.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, everyone's going to save their own skin. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
With the whole FBI thing.
Well, it's funny, too, in Casino, because Billy Batts is the one that kills Joe Pesci
yeah.
in Casino. So he gets his revenge. Then he's in Sopranos, too.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think there's depth. I mean, it's not, I think it's almost more like it is like what you'd get from a book. Like, it's almost saying more about this country than it is saying about like the human condition and also the appeal of crime and the shortcut of crime and like the glamour and all of that. And yeah.
Let's talk about like in the 80s, when it hits 1980. That's always the darkest part of this movie for me. Like, I hate when it reaches that
point. Well, Boogie Nights is the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, of course, like, you know, I'm shallow. And like I said, the aesthetics of, like, before. But anyway, no, it's a great scene. I'm just joking. But
you're talking about the last act of the movie.
His brother is way too young.
Kevin Corrigan?
Okay, that kid in the wheelchair is like 20. He shouldn't be 20. We saw him in the 50s and he was a child then. Why is he so young in 1980?
You know,
have you ever thought about that?
I kind of thought about that before, but like Ray Liotta doesn't look very old. I know he's supposed to be a little older than
he is. Oh, they
didn't
even age him up.
Yeah,
or Lorraine Bracco, which I don't care.
I kind of don't care.
I don't care. And why do I love them? Like, even though they're so toxic.
Oh, because they're magnetic.
Like, yeah, but like when they're like, when they basically just like crash and they're like just asleep on the floor, I'm like,
They love each other.
I think they love each other too.
This fucked up way.
But the also when he gets out of prison, I love that.
The smile.
It's so good.
Yeah.
But I love, speaking of the 80s, I love Jimmy's glasses in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
They are so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love De Niro in this. We didn't even talk about De Niro.
You know what's funny?
You don't think about him that much.
No, you don't, because he's doing a good job, but he's not. It's kind of a standard, and this sounds like a
no, it's true.
A slight.
No.
But it's like a standard De Niro role where he's there, he does the thing. In this movie, he's kind of glue that holds some pieces together. He's good. But yeah, when I think of this movie, I don't always think of his performance.
And he gets top billing.
He's De Niro, yeah.
I know.
I think Joe Pesci was very hesitant to do this movie. I think Scorsese had to like really beg him.
Really?
Because he's like, we did Raging Bull, like we've already kind of done this. It's a very different movie, but the role is, you know, not, I mean, there's some similarity, but they're still pretty different roles. But yeah, doing a movie with De Niro and there's mob stuff and whatever. But I really, because my two favorite Scorsese movies, big surprise, or big, this feels lame to say, but it's this and Raging Bull. And what I love so much about those movies is they're both explorations of toxic masculinity, but done in very different ways. And like Raging Bull is this like zoomed in portrait of this animal. Goodfellas is a zoomed out sort of panoramic of like the same thing, you know?
Yeah, but it's like a comedy. I feel like, honestly, is it bad to say that I consider this movie a comedy?
I think a lot of his movies have... yeah, good amount of humor in them. I wouldn't say this is a comedy.
It's so funny, though.
But it's funny. Absolutely, and it's fun.
Here's the thing. It's fun. This movie's extremely fun.
Yeah. I'm not sure what exactly about it makes it so rewatchable. Because there's lots of fun movies that you see a couple times, you're like, okay, that's enough. But like Goodfellas, I don't know. I always come back to this movie. I've seen this many times on the big screen. I've seen it projected on 35.
That's cool.
I think, too, there's something aesthetic about this movie where if you made it now, it wouldn't be the same. I think shooting on 35 at this time and in these places that still kind of existed in this kind of dingy but glamorous atmosphere and these smoke-filled tiki bars,
it's
and like
the bars and stuff.
And the music.
Yeah.
And
the music.
Let's talk about the music, because I think it's a big draw for the movie.
Oh.
I think when George Lucas does American Graffiti in 1973, I think it was 73, he kind of invents the wall-to-wall, like, pop song soundtrack. And this movie, for my money, is probably the best. I'm probably with American Graffiti. I love American Graffiti. But this movie, in terms of using music so well at conveying the era, the feeling,
and the
great part about it is he's not using really, really well-known songs. There's a couple in here, but a lot of them are like a step or two beyond that.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel more lived in. I think there's nothing worse than a period piece where they just use like, oh, we're in the 60s, so we're going to use, I don't know, White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane. You're like, okay, real original. There's something about, I mean, Scorsese's a real music fan and he knows this era of music so intimately that like he's able to weave it like this fabric throughout the movie, and it just it's a life of its own.
I love the music. I love but they're very cinematic choices, but that's the genre of music that it is. It's like 60s grand cinematic, all these songs with like strings,
a lot of Phil Spector.
Yeah.
In fact, when I think of this movie, I think of Phil Spector. That's probably the first thing that comes to mind. But like the interesting thing about it is, so even we're in the 70s, like, you know, they do the Lufthansa heist and there's that great scene where they have the Christmas party. And
oh my God, and he walks in with the fur coat,
and the Cadillac.
See, that's hilarious.
Take it off. I don't care where you got it. Take it back. Get it out of here.
It's so good.
But the music is the Ronettes or the Phil Spector Christmas album, because it's Frosty the Snowman and it's Darlene Love singing Christmas Baby Please Come Home, which at that point are like 10 years old. The key is that these characters are kind of stuck in this time.
Well, because they're very old fashioned.
Realistically, and on the jukebox in that scene, it would have been something, you know, it would have been like Neil Young or like, I don't know, something else, right? But like, it's still the Phil Spector stuff from the early to mid 60s. And so it's like kind of like these guys refusing to evolve.
Absolutely. They're very old fashioned. They're very conservative.
So it's like, yeah, he even tells the story in that way, like through the music that he picks. Yeah. Just by what he's playing during what scene. And then virtuosically, is that a word? Mm-hmm. The whole crash out sequence at the end, the whole final act of the drug fueled Henry.
Uh-huh.
And the way that it weaves from like song A to B to C back to A, you kind of get this tapestry of like songs like Harry Nilsson, Jump Into the Fire, George Harrison, What Is Life, Monkey Man by the Rolling Stones. There's a couple other songs in there that are kind of just like cyclical, adding to the paranoia of how he kind of goes back to this one and then goes back to that one. And
it's so good.
It's just like, oh.
I know. It's really good.
It's so good.
it is really good.
I'm going to say something. I think most people probably agree with me. This is pop filmmaking.
Yeah.
And this is pop filmmaking at its best. Definitely. I don't think you could pull another movie that is sort of pop in this way that is as effective as Goodfellas. Yeah.
Also, the way that it shows us how their houses change and how the decor changes, and when Janice gets her apartment, how that's decorated, and she's giving them all a tour and tacky. And then when he gets out of prison and he buys the new house and it's super tacky.
So tacky with the zebra print and then the thing that opens.
The TV.
Yeah.
It's so good.
What do you
Absolutely
think about,
showing us time and place and chance he gets.
I watched this with Molly and she noticed that at Karen's house, like Karen's parents' house, that every time you see the house, the same flowers are blooming outside. And I was like, well, of course. I mean, it's like hard because like years pass or whatever. And it's like, yeah, they probably had that house for like 2 days or something. But no, yeah, totally. You see the stuff, but their own style doesn't really change.
No, the clothing. Well, it changes a little bit, but they're still wearing those crazy collars in like the 70s, I think.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, what is that theory that everyone has the hairstyle of like whenever they kind of peaked and then they just keep that hairstyle for the rest of their lives?
That's so funny.
It's the same thing here. It's like they have their moment and then that moment just kind of slowly slides down, but they're like still in it.
Yeah.
Refusing to kind of, because the whole thing of the movie, right, is like, as it moves into the drug stuff, like that is clearly where the money is. It's not in like stealing cigarettes. Remember in Sopranos when they steal DVD players?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like they're not like Pauly is refusing to kind of change with the times because everyone's kind of getting into drugs. It's also a plot point in The Godfather. Like not wanting to get into the drug business because it's dirty or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot to this movie. Wait, I want to talk really quick about Maury.
Oh my God, the wig guy?
Because he is strangely one of the most sympathetic characters in this movie.
I feel bad for him. Yeah, I feel really bad for him. Why won't Jimmy pay him? Well, I mean, I know why. But like, it's that he gives everyone else money and he kills them. He doesn't even give him money. He just kills him.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's messed up.
Well, and the way, too, he does it where he tells Henry about it. And then he's like, never mind, never mind.
And then he just does it.
And then he just does it.
I know.
And then the reaction of his wife.
And she comes over. Yeah, that's really sad.
In 30 years, he always comes. He never came, you know. And then there's also that great scene when you first meet him. And you see his commercial.
Oh, yeah.
And you're talking
so
about
good.
Comedy. When Jimmy starts strangling him with the telephone cord, like you're laughing, even though this poor guy is like, his wig is like,
he always hated
off.
Him.
Yeah, but he's interesting. And then I also really love the actor's name is Frank Severo. He was in New York, New York, Scorsese's.
Sounds so
movie.
Familiar.
He's also in The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler.
Okay.
But in this, he's Carbone. He's the guy who gets frozen in the meat truck.
Oh, yes.
That guy. Okay. First of all, I love him.
His look is amazing.
He has such a great look. He's not in this movie a lot, but he's always kind of in the background. He's in that intro scene at the tiki bar. And he's this thing, hey, quesadich.
Yeah.
And if you follow him now, if you look him up on Instagram, he has a very entertaining Instagram account where he still says, hey, quesadich. Like, that's his thing. But it's like, he's like, hey, look, I'm making my Sunday gravy. And it's just like him making a sauce. Or it's like him making meatballs.
Oh, wow.
But he's kind of lost it a little bit. it's like a little bit sad. But just a fascinating character. And again, like people like that who are peppered so beautifully throughout this movie. He's also in The Godfather Part 2.
Yeah.
In the De Niro scenes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. The movie just has this like, because all of the people in the background just look and sound amazing.
That's
and
why it's just they like, share 27 actors with The Sopranos.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like, that's insane.
Because when you find someone that looks like that and sounds like you that, you're like, that's the person.
Well, Pussy, he's just in it for 1 second. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Could you have,
Pussy.
Could you have done this?
To Pussy?
No, could you have lived this lifestyle?
You know? If I was like, I don't know how Karen is, how old she's supposed to be. I would imagine her early 20s when they meet. I could see myself being lured. I did stupid stuff. I was very naive. I could have been lured. I'm not even kidding.
I ignore
red flags.
Well, it's funny because someone like Henry... Yeah, I mean, there's lots of red flags. She even talks about like how when most women, if they were given a gun to hide by their boyfriend, they would have left, but she was turned on by it. Yeah. But she's very self-aware from the beginning. She knows what she's getting into.
I know.
And she's seduced by it.
I know. And I love the wedding scene is so good when they're all handing the envelopes. It's the same envelope full of money.
And then her worried about
The bag.
Them being taken. No one's going to take those here. And him introducing, like, everyone's a Peter or a Paul
or
a
Marie.
Yeah.
So good.
It is so good.
It kind of comes up in Big Fat Greek Wedding, do you remember, where everyone's Anita, Diane, and Nick?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Greeks and Italians, there's a lot of overlap there.
Yeah, of course.
These big families, you know.
This movie is fantastic. Big surprise. It's so good. I just had such a good time watching this all alone on a Sunday. It was beautiful. It was great.
Well, before we get into our favorite sight and sound, just this quick word from our sponsors.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Jackie, what's your favorite sight?
I mean, it's kind of obvious.
Is
I think it? I've made it obvious. It's the Copa shot. It's the sight and sound. It's and then he kissed me. And
the crystals. And
it's the perfect shot. Like, it gave me chills watching. I've seen it so many times. It gave me chills. That rarely happens.
Here's a little clip from it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, see you later. Thanks.
What are you doing? You're leaving your car?
What? It's a car for me. It's easier than leaving it out of the garage and waiting. It's a lot quicker that way. You know what I mean? Huh? I like going this way. It's better than waiting in the line.
How you doing, man?
Good, good. What's up? How you doing, Gino?
Good.
How are you? Good, good. Hey. Every time I come here, every time you two. What you want?
God, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And the table's coming up and they're like giggling and he's like so charming and the song is so good.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
That is, I get a lot of, we're all into problematic artists or whatever, but one of the hills I'm not going to die on because he's fully a creep and was guilty.
Phil Spector?
I'm a huge, huge, huge Phil Spector fan.
Weirdo.
I think one of the true geniuses of the 20th century. But yeah, a murderer. A murderer.
Yeah.
But like, his music means it's everything to me. It means everything. And yeah, that song is so fucking good.
My God.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about that shot, Jackie. People took the wrong lesson from it. Every fucking young filmmaker that comes after Goodfellas does a long shot just to do it. Yeah, just to fucking do it. I'm like, Scorsese has intention. There's a reason. That scene is this descent. It starts on the street. It goes down. You're entering into this underworld, this world of glamour and this backstage area. And like, it needs to happen in real time. It so works. It does what it's supposed to do because we're dazzled with Karen.
Exactly. That's her first time like going out and being wined and dined. And it's like, whoa. Yeah, I would. And now that I think about it, I absolutely would. And Ray Liotta is so cute.
You know, when I was single, people started, because my last name is Kleinschmidt. They started calling me Wine and Dine Schmidt. That for a short time, that was my nickname.
That is hilarious. Would you wine and dine a lot?
Yeah, I guess so. By taking them to like a 24-hour diner at like 1 a.m. or something. I don't know.
What? You did that?
No, I mean, yeah. Like a diner?
No. Yeah, for a date?
Yeah. I guess I would like... Yeah, when I was there was this period.
Hey, let's meet up at 1 a.m. at this diner. No, that like was the date?
No, we were like already out.
Got you.
But no, yeah, I would go into, I would take dates into San Francisco and we go to the North Beach area, which is the Italian area. And there was this restaurant called Calzones. I'm not sure if that's still there. We go to the Castro Theater, see like an old movie. But yeah, anyway, it was a dumb. I just thought of it because you said wine and dine. But what was I saying?
The Copa shot.
Oh, yeah.
Perfection.
The wrong lesson, and nothing infuriates me more now because it kind of happens sometimes a lot in like shows now where they'll do a oneer
a lot in shows.
For no reason.
Okay, but can I say, and it's kind of related, it happens a lot in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel,
okay,
which is set in this same time, going to these same clubs a lot of the times, and it's more about the chaos. Have you seen the show?
I've seen a couple eps.
The Steadicams usually work for me in that show because it's such eye candy the whole show, and she'll be backstage like she's gonna go on and there's like, and she knows everyone and she's doing funny one-liners. Hey, did you like, she, they all know her, and it's all these people in costume sometime, and it's really good.
Mm.
Anyway,
yeah,
that was my,
no,
I see what you're saying, and it is used a lot.
Yeah,
and they use it on that show a lot, but I think it works because it's similar to this and that we're seeing, yeah, this like backstage world most of the time.
No, that sounds great. I just hate when it's used as just a way to show off and nothing else. Because you can always feel that. You're like, yeah, I get it, bro. You can do a wonder.
I love wonders.
No, they're great. And then there's the way wonders. That Spielberg does them, where he does them all the time, but you never notice because he's not showy about
exactly.
them.
Exactly. You know what's a really interesting wonder? The movie... There was a lot I liked about the movie, but I don't know if it worked overall. Did you ever see Last Night in Soho?
Yes, it did not work overall.
It didn't, but that is a real one-er shot of her dance. Like when they're switching dancers.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Because she's not really Anya Taylor-Joy. Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
That is a one shot, and I've seen the behind the scenes of how they shot. It's incredible.
Hmm.
So anyway... I'm optimistic. I like when new movies and shows use it. Anyway.
What about when your boy Damien Chazelle uses it?
I don't know what you're talking about. What's your favorite blow.
Okay.
Site?
So it was almost, it's also Sight and Sound. It was almost when they're sitting there, you mentioned the shot already, Jerry Vale, pretend you don't love her. They're watching him perform. It's their night with the girlfriends.
Yeah, and they're just in trance.
They're in trance, and there's the beautiful spotlight.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's an incredible shot. But I'm going with another one-er, not your one-er.
Tiki.
I'm going with the Bamboo Lounge.
It because is so good.
There's something about, it is an ingenious way to introduce all these characters. But it's like, yeah, most of these people don't even really appear ever again in the movie.
Right.
It just adds texture and it like sets the stage for this world.
And there's
world.
No like important, you don't need to remember any of their names. You don't need to remember what they do. You know, like it's not like that. It's not like a introduction like that. It's more just, yeah, a tapestry.
Yeah, this movie's easy to follow.
Yeah.
And also I love the Mina song. Il Stanzo Cielo or something. I don't know. My Italian's terrible. But yeah, the song's incredible. And it's also really funny. Just them, hey, guy, how's it going? You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah. To an random, like, we never, there's no person they're talking to. They're talking to us.
Yeah. So here it is.
There was Jimmy and Tommy and me, and there was Anthony Stabile.
How you doing?
Frankie Carbone. And then there was Mo Black's brother, Fat Andy. And his guy's Frankie the Wop. Freddie No Nose. And then there was Pete the Killer, who was Sally Balls' brother.
Took care of that thing for you.
And you had Nicky Eyes.
What's up, guy?
And Mikey Francesi.
I saw that guy, yeah, I want to see him.
And Jimmy Two Times, who got that nickname because he said everything twice, like...
I'm going to go get the papers, get the papers. Come on, look it up.
Yeah, I just love it. I love
it. Listen, those are, like, legendary shots, both of them.
Yeah. Well... this is our segment where we do Pauline Kael, and we do have a nice meaty Pauline Kael review this week.
Let's hear
it. So we're going out before our break on a nice, I feel like it's been a while since we've had
when
a Pauline
When was the
Kael.
Last time we had one?
I don't know. All right, Pauline Kael on Goodfellas. Here's what she had to say. Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas has a lift. It's like Raging Bull, except that it's not domineering. It's like Raging Bull made in a jolly, festive frame of mind.
Yeah.
It's about being a guy and guys getting high on being a guy. Is it a great movie? I don't think so. But it's but it's a triumphant piece of filmmaking. Journalism presented with the brio of drama.
Mm.
Every frame is active and vivid, and you can feel the director's passionate delight in making these pictures move. What's missing? Well, there are no great voices. The script by Pileggi and Scorsese isn't really dramatized. Instead, Scorsese raises the volume on the music and the guys work themselves up, get hard, erupt. This isn't the kind of mindless movie that offers up brutality as entertainment with good guys versus bad guys. Scorsese offers up brutal racketeering and says, this is all there is to these men. Scorsese's Jake LaMotta could do one thing, fight. These guys can do one thing, steal. It's a little off-key when Henry reacts to Tommy and Jimmy's acts of violence with puzzled revulsion. During a card game, Joe Pesci's Tommy, clowning around, shoots a teenager who's slow to serve him a drink. Incidents like this, they're terrifically well-framed, appear to be pointing toward an awakening sensibility in Henry, but nothing comes of them, so they seem perfunctory. A sop to conventionality. De Niro has a scene where he goes berserk, and that doesn't develop into anything either. Scorsese doesn't weight the incidents dramatically. He leaves the themes and even the story lying there inert. In a hurried, not very shapely concluding sequence, he ties up some threads and tells us about a few of the characters in final titles, omitting, though, a high comic piece of information. Hill was so determinately crooked, he used the new identity given him by the Witness Protection Program to start up a new life of thievery and was thrown out of the program. But then we've learned so little about him, it's startling to read the title telling us that Henry and Karen separated after 25 years because we realize we don't have any knowledge of what kept them together so long. The picture has scope rather than depth. We see Henry Hill only from the outside, and he has been made to seem slightly cut off from the mob life. He has been turned into a retread of the anxious, dutiful Harvey Keitel character in Mean Streets, when he needs to be a rat and the motor of the movie. Goodfellas is like the Howard Hawks Scarface without Scarface. Paul Sorvino's Polly comes through. Reluctant to move his bulk, he basks in his power quietly and never calls attention to himself. Though Lorraine Bracco's Karen doesn't get much screen time, she has a hot, bright vitality. She seems more sexual, more full of go than her husband. She's in love with him even when she pulls a gun on him. And some of the minor players give the movie a frenzied, funny texture. Yet the movie making has such bravura that you respond as if you were at a live performance. It's Scorsese's performance. He came of age as a director in the early 70s, at a time when many film enthusiasts were caught up in the 60s idea that a good movie is always about its director. There's a streak of metaphoric truth in this, but here Scorsese puts the idea right up front. The filmmaking process becomes the subject of the movie. All you want to talk about is the glorious whizzing camera, the freeze frames and jump cuts. That may be why young film enthusiasts are so turned on by Scorsese's work. They don't just respond to his films, they want to be him. Scorsese, the arousal junkie, makes you feel you'd like to hang out with him and listen to him tell how he brought off the effects. He's a master. But the picture doesn't have the juice and richness that come with major performances. It has no arc and doesn't climax. It just comes to a stop. Conceivably, the abruptness could work, but I don't think it does. Will the lift of the movie making still carry some people aloft? Maybe, because watching this movie is like getting strung out on pure sensation. That's Scorsese's idea of a hood's life. It's also a young film enthusiast's dream of a director's life. And in Scorsese's case, it's not too far from the truth.
That's a really good review.
Very well said, Pauline. I don't agree with her, but I see where she's coming from. And I almost wonder that if she had seen this again, she might have felt differently about it, because she was notoriously would watch a movie one time. That was it.
Yeah. Again, yeah, it's the no depth thing. Which I get. Like, I get what she's saying. She's not wrong, but I just don't. I think it's just, it's not about him not having depth. I think it's just, yeah, it's a good point. He just goes right back to, you know, a life of crime, showing that, no, he doesn't really care about anything. Like, it is just his apathy. And I don't know, it's, that's deep.
Yeah.
I think that's deep, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think, I mean, look, I wonder how she would have felt about some filmmakers who came afterwards, but in fact, I'm really curious. I think she retired before Tarantino came on the scene, but judging by her comments about Scorsese, I feel like she would not have liked Tarantino.
Maybe not. That's a good point.
Because it almost sounds sometimes like she's describing Tarantino, like someone where you go to see them perform and like their voice is what the message and is what you're going for. And it's like, I think that's selling Scorsese a little short. Like, he is a prodigious talent. Like, he's on another level. Like, he's one of our absolute greatest filmmakers of the 20th century. But like, judging by his work and the variety of it, and like, so much of his stuff is not sort of in this hyper style. It's like Silence. Like, if you think about his movie Silence, which I don't love, but I mean, I like it, but he has a lot of stuff. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. You know, like, they're not these like showy virtuosic movies. Like, they're much more reserved. So like, or like Last Temptation of Christ. It's like, I don't know that I agree with, I don't know. I never get the sense that Scorsese's style impedes the work. I mean, it's like,
maybe when he's doing this like mob type thing.
But I feel like the way he's telling the story is essential to the story.
Absolutely.
And it would suffer if it was done in just kind of like a routine way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Letterboxd?
Yeah.
Someone gave it 5 stars and said, "Am I officially a film bro?"
Yeah, literally. Same. 5 stars. "Hearing Robert De Niro say, 'What's the matter with you?' is music to my ears."
I love in that scene, I think they're talking about the spider scene. I love how Frank Sabero's like, "Nice fucking game."
Yeah. That scene is so good because they're all pissed.
Yeah.
Like, they're all mad at him.
Yeah.
But they don't punish him.
No.
Because it's just a chain. It's the...
Except making him dig his own hole.
It's the food chain, though. Like, it's like... you can't touch him. Like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. 5 stars. "An epic that feels nothing like one. Tonally, Goodfellas feels like marathoning 6 episodes of the most addictive, exciting soap opera of all time. You've got crazy, colorful, hilarious characters up the wazoo. But let your guard down around any of them. Say the wrong thing, bam, you sleep with the fishes."
Like we just talked about.
Yeah.
Oh, Christopher. Love him. It's not Christopher, it's Christopher.
Christopher. Chris is such a dumbass, too.
I know, but I love him. I love his script that he's writing.
Is it Hatchet or something?
I don't remember. 5 stars. Martin Scorsese, thank you for inventing Italians. Okay, and I have a 1/2-star one. Definition of a cornball movie.
Oh, I have that one too.
Unbelievably boring with an insufferable plot. Would rather watch paint dry than sit through this again. No likes. This review has no likes.
A troll.
Yeah.
Because it's not anything like watching paint dry.
I like the cornball movie, though.
There's nothing cornball about it. 1/2-star. Godfather derivative. And even that movie is pure schlock.
Oh my God. Okay, 1/2-star. Call me illiterate and tasteless, but watching this one, I was wondering why should I care about these assholes of characters. All they do is betray and deceive each other, and there is not a single relationship in the film that would be built on something good. They fight each other for money, power, drugs, fake respect, fake companionship. I want to see someone who likes this and ask them why, and I hope maybe I just don't know the context or don't see the hidden message, which would change my mind. For now, I just hate it. Listen to our pod. Imagine a comment. Hey, if you want to learn why you should like this movie.
Last one I have, 1/2-star. Tell me what they're referring to here. So unbelievably boring. Scorsese has the biggest meat riders on earth.
What?
Emerging from the deepest pits of cuck hell with this one. Cuck hell?
What the heck?
Who's being cucked in this movie?
What did they say?
Meat rider.
What's that?
I'm assuming it's something sexual.
That took a second. Ew.
Yeah, that's gross. Maybe I shouldn't have read that one. Pretend I didn't. Anyway,
okay.
This is good, fellas. Come on. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
There's nothing you can do.
No, there's nothing you can do. It's incredibly late here where we're recording. So we're going to sign off and we're going to say, please enjoy the next few months without us.
Mm.
And we will return. We promise. We do have a gigantic backlog of episodes. I think like 165 episodes or something.
Wow.
So if you miss us in this time,
you can go back. Re-listen.
Unless you're one of those people. If you have listened to every single episode of Seen and Heard, let us know.
Yeah,
because
please.
I'm curious. I'm curious if you exist. I want to know.
I do too.
So yeah, make yourself known. If you have, it could be a public comment or you can email us at hello@seenandheardpod.com. But we're just curious. Have you heard every episode of Seen and Heard?
Have you seen every movie?
Maybe we'll send you a little something. Anyway.
Yeah, honestly. And don't lie.
Yeah, don't lie. We're going to check. We have ways of checking. Anyway. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this 2022 list, the top 100, Jackie. So this has been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolute pleasure.
And we're going out delirious late night on Goodfellas. So, yeah, we will return and peace be with you.
Bye.
Seen and Heard is an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line, you can find us on email at hello@seenandheardpod.com or on Instagram at seenandheardpod.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.